You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, welcome to Blogging Heads TV. My name is Arya Cohen-Wade, and this is Culturally Determined. And my guest today is Michael Tracy. Michael, could you introduce yourself?
Hello, I am a journalist. I am a columnist for Vice. I contribute to other places as well, New York Daily News, Daily Beast, New Republic, and so forth.
So thank you for coming on today. This is actually kind of like a challenge episode of Blogging Heads, because we've had kind of a short-running debate. I've been thinking about this kind of like the rumble in the jungle, although maybe we should call it the rumble in the trumple, if you will.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely accurate, so let's go with it.
So we've had kind of dispute about Donald Trump. And I did a previous episode of Blogging Heads with Jim Newell of Slate, and you reacted to that, so we kind of went back and forth. So people can watch that episode, but you won't need to watch that episode to kind of understand this episode. Okay, so I guess here's my first question. Mm-hmm. Do you think Donald Trump really wants to be president?
I do, but I also think that this tendency to over-psychoanalyze is not especially helpful. I mean, the way that we can discern what his true intentions are to observe what his behavior has been. And his behavior has been to mercilessly demolish his opponents in the Republican primary process.
And yeah, he took them out one by one, like almost literally he took them out one by one.
It was actually sort of glorious to observe for someone who was like a disinterested party. And he's subsequently marshaled the machinery of the Republican Party behind him to such a degree that he now exerts leverage over the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, myriad state party actors and operators, and despite whatever kind of ridiculous comment he might have made in the past day, all that.
We're recording this on a Sunday, so I'm sure he'll have said something else by the time this is posted that we can't react to. But he says something kind of crazy every single day. Sometimes multiple crazy things per day.
He could easily call for World War III tonight, and it won't impact the reality that everything he's done up to this point indicates very clearly that he does seek to be president. He is going to be on the ballot in the presidential election. So this psychoanalysis that people are seemingly obsessed with is not the most useful indicator in determining what is actually going on politically and what his campaign strategy is. His campaign strategy is to obtain the presidency of the United States. I think that's fair to say at this point.
Okay, well, I mostly disagree with that. Well, let's go with the psychoanalysis point. So this kind of cheap psychoanalysis, which is what Maureen Dowd built her career on, and is she and a lot of pundits do, and kind of Carl Digler makes fun of that kind of punditry of like speaking from your gut. Obama's a cat. Hillary is a dog. Who gives a fuck? This is kind of the cheapest form of punditry. Peggy Noonan, Maureen Dowd, Carl Digler. They all kind of do this. I'm not interested in that. I'm more interested in like what's actually happening here. This is the weirdest election since 1860, perhaps. That was a banner year in American history. Did you read the piece that was published in Exo Jane by a woman who was a freelance PR consultant who was part of Trump's operation for a couple months?
Yeah, I did, and I'm not, and I know you've mentioned that before. I'm not totally sold on that being a definitive take on what's actually happening here. It seemed to be a fair amount of conjecture. And
so that was possibly just an employee who got fired or whatever and is trying to even the score or something. Right. So that, we can't take that as at pure face value. I would agree with that.
Yeah. And even let's say half of that was accurate, whatever his thinking personally might have been a year ago, which I think is the time frame that piece referenced. We're at a point now where it's no longer relevant. I mean, he's on the ballot in 50 states for one of the major political parties in the United States.
Would you agree with me that he does not have the nomination yet?
No, I vehemently disagree with that. And that's sort of the crux of our initial conflict over this theory. Yeah.
Okay, so to explain to me why you do not agree with the statement, Donald Trump is not yet the GOP nominee.
Well, I think when people conceive of what it means to obtain the Republican nomination, or for that matter, the Democratic nomination, they kind of gloss over the compendium of local and state law which exists to facilitate that nomination. So one of the fallacies that actually you've seen a lot on the Democratic side this election cycle, and you know, before Trump essentially wrapped up the nomination on the Republican side as well, is this theory that the party nominating processes are simply private affairs run by a private entity to nominate a candidate on behalf of its own private interests. And that's just a fundamental misunderstanding of what a political party is in America, especially one of the main two political parties, which are kept in existence by a raft of law and precedent and legal custom at every level of government. So it's not a strictly private affair. And that's best evidenced by the fact that the process governing selection of delegates is enumerated by state statutes in, I think, at least half the states. And,
To clarify, right. So in some states, they can kind of make up what they want to do. I believe correct me if I'm wrong, the Colorado GOP, canceled the primary.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we're not doing this here, guys. We'll figure it out on our own. See you later. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, they canceled the primary. I think
that's weird. That's just like a weird thing to happen.
It is weird, but it's just an example of the variegation of how different states engage in this process. So they didn't actually cancel the primary. What they did was cancel the potential of a caucus, because there was a Democratic caucus. And so in 2012 in Colorado, there was a primary for both parties. Mm-hmm. The Democratic primary was obviously not contested, but there's still a primary held. The state legislature didn't pass a law to establish that the 2016 primary would be held on whatever date, as a result of some party infighting and so forth. So the primary was never scheduled. So the parties had to take it upon themselves to come up with some kind of nominating procedure. So the Democrats came up with the caucus, and the Republicans came up with nothing. So the Republicans had to hold some kind of freewheeling, insane convention process that the Cruz crew, RIP, was able to dominate.
Well, RIP or coming back right back at you.
No, I think they're still
tag team back again.
No, they're still pretty well buried, and the mortician has pronounced on them, and the obituaries have been written, and it's over. The Cruz crew is still with us in the form of email lists and ridiculously comprehensive big data. That they can't.
So the scam can continue in 2020, but you're saying the impetus, Ted Cruz is not going to mount a comeback at the convention.
We don't have to wait till 2020 for that data to be relevant, actually. And this is something that's been overlooked. I mean, the Cruz campaign was renowned by a lot of very savvy pundits for its aptitude at collecting data on potential voters and caucus goers. So they crafted these personality profiles about, that included shopping behavior and church attendance and every other conceivable.
Micro-targeting, I believe this is the term.
Right, and that's just massively valuable data to have for a political purpose or any other purpose. So
if you want to sell seeds or gold doubloons, this is very valuable information to have.
Yeah, or church membership newsletter subscriptions, evangelical megachurch memorabilia of various kinds. So there's very, very
stuff made from the Holy Land, maybe, you know, crashes and stuff like that. Yeah, okay, well, we're kind of getting off track.
Gold doubloons? Okay.
Yeah, gold doubloons. So a lot of fun stuff. Okay, so yeah, the data still exists, and this can go on. Okay. So, okay, it seems to me that it is a plain fact that Donald Trump is not the nominee, Hillary Clinton is not the nominee, Bernie Sanders, like, still hasn't, like, officially dropped out of the race, for whatever reason. You're not the nominee until you're nominated, am I wrong?
No, you are right about that, which is why we've come up with this sort of inaccurate label, presumptive.
Right.
It is presumptuous. It's presumptuous.
I say it's presumptuous to call either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump the nominee. I mean, they could drop dead of a heart attack tomorrow. They're both around age 70. So there's crazy stuff that could happen. America's a violent country. Crazy stuff could happen that throws the whole thing into disarray at this point.
Yeah, but going back to the theory that you proffered as to how Trump could be thwarted even at this late juncture.
Yeah, just to reiterate, for people who are coming in the in the middle of this crazy stream of disconnected thoughts, okay, he is not the nominee yet. He will not become the nominee until 1,237 delegates to the Republican National Convention say he's the nominee. There's a lot of wiggle room there. They could unbind all the delegates. I think that's almost definitely going to happen. They could just choose not to vote. There doesn't have to be a nominee. Who says there has to be a nominee? It's not the law. It's the party.
Okay, but
the party decides.
Right, but there are laws that do say that a large portion of delegates are bound, again, by the laws that have been passed by their state legislatures, to vote for Trump on the first ballot, and in some states, onto the second, third, or even fourth ballots, as long as Trump is an active candidate and has not died.
Trump could die. We hope it doesn't happen.
If he dies,
could take a shot at him, or he could just keel over. He doesn't seem like he's in the best health. Have you seen a photo of his facial skin? Something's happening there that doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
And the other thing is that he admits to not exercising, and he admits to a poor diet.
He's obviously somewhat overweight. He doesn't drink, which shows that he's not, he knows his own limits in intelligent ways. So apparently he doesn't drink at all.
But he just turned
70.
I think he might have like a pint of ice cream every night or something.
Yeah, that makes sense in weird ways, because he's kind of like an overgrown toddler. eating a lot of ice cream every night before Melania tucks him in.
And he eats McDonald's. I mean, that was revealed in the New Yorker piece this past week. And I think Variety visited him at his Beverly Hills mansion and noted in the profile that he did, he did scoff down an entire pint of ice cream over the course of the interview. So
he could literally drop dead. Maybe he'll drop dead on top of Melania. I hope that doesn't happen for all of our sakes.
Especially her. That would be dangerous.
Yeah, they'd have to find her 5 hours later. So he could pass away and have an untimely death. We hope not. He could decide, hey guys, I don't want to do this. He could fake his own death. Okay, I wrote a piece. We'll put the link up. It's joking on the square. It's a satire. It's a humor piece. It imagines Trump faking his own death to get out of this crazy situation. We'll put the link up there. People can read it and decide what they think. This is the farce version of my argument that Trump doesn't want to be president. This is the producers. He tried to fail. He's tried to fail over and over and over again. He says a new crazy thing every single day. He said that Ted Cruz's father was involved in the assassination of JFK. That's, JFK conspiracy theory is that and Roswell, New Mexico are kind of the paradigmatic American crazy conspiracy theories that once you say them, you are disqualified from having, an intelligent saying anything else about American life. And yet he won the Indiana primary the next day, and Ted Cruz was forced to drop out. It's the producers. It's springtime for Hitler. He's trying desperately to lose every single day. I mean, if he stays in, he's going to lose the election in a landslide. I don't think he really wants to do that. He can't lose because he's a winner. He's like Charlie Sheen. His brand is winning. Okay, so then it has to be stolen from him somehow. I did an early series of joke tweets about him being stabbed in the back, saying, I was stabbed in the back, and this knife, this is the worst knife ever. You won't believe this knife. But if it's in everyone's incentive, it's certainly in the GOP's incentive for him not to be on the ballot in November. I think it's also in his incentive not to be on the ballot in November. They will find some way to get out of this. That's what I think.
There may be some miscreants among the GOP ranks who desire that outcome. But
do you think Rentz Priebus, poor Rentz Priebus, wants him to be the nominee?
I mean, I don't know. I've never met Rentz Priebus. I don't really care to meet him.
No, I care for his safety, honestly.
I'm not credentialed to perform a psychoanalysis on him.
He needs it.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like someone I would really want to associate with to any major extent.
He's the purest. I mean, he is the party hack who leads all the other party hacks. So he's a hack.
Yeah, but the other point is that there. So let's say that there were a non-negligible portion of operators in the GOP universe who want to oust Trump. Okay, so
I think it's probably 90%. But
okay, go on. No, that's a major exaggeration. But because here's another thing. So you perceive that proportion of GOP people who want to oust Trump at around 90%.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that is a perception informed by the overrepresentation of the never Trump dead enders and holdouts in elite media and the social media spheres. So the type of people who are going to hold out for these outlandish scenarios where Trump could still be ousted are the people who opposed him in the primary, who launched these various failed never Trump efforts that crashed and burned probably more spectacularly than any political movement. And
it was pretty
history.
Pathetic. What they came up with was pretty pathetic. And, they couldn't take him down.
And those people, you know, got outsized media attention because they tend to be social media savvy and connected.
People like Liz Mayer. Who was that guy, Rick? Yeah. What is his last name?
Rick Wilson.
Rick Wilson on Twitter.
Patrick Ruffini is another one.
These are smart conservatives who tried to stop Trump and they failed.
Yeah. And they tend to, and they're active in the media spheres. Mm-hmm. So it creates this impression that opposition to Trump is more widespread than it actually is. And this was a feature of the primary process as well, where was and people forget now, but the prevailing theory at the time is that once the field quote unquote winnows, Republicans would instinctively gravitate to Trump's opponent because they just have this burning desire to oppose Trump for whatever reason, and it never panned out.
Because, well, here's a question. Complete your thought.
Yeah, just to complete the thought. And I think, you know, the remnants of that persist today, where, you know, you have these theories being concocted about Trump's ouster from the same people who are still overrepresented in media. If the proportion of Trump supporters and non-Trump supporters from the Republican coalition was accurately represented in media, I think your perception of the possibility of him being ousted would be dramatically different.
Well, there's a lot of threads here. You have these poor, unfortunate, you know, intellectual conservatives, DC Beltway types, who tried and failed to stop Trump. Okay, so they were kind of pathetic. Agreed. You have the strange fact that no one really tried to frontally attack Trump. I mean, another politician tried to frontally attack Trump until Rubio tried it and failed pretty badly, and then he dropped out. And then you had Cruz really unloading on Trump for a very short period of time, really like 24 hours before the Indiana primaries when he really unloaded on him, and then he dropped out. And then you had Kasich, who kind of played it, tried to be friendly to everyone, and was kind of like a bumbling, kind of like soccer dad type. And then strangely, he dropped out. Okay, I have my own conspiracy theory about that, but we'll put that to the side. No one ever really tried to focus their fire in a sustained way with a lot of money behind it and a lot of smarts on Trump. Like, that gets, well, that if he's the nominee, then Hillary Clinton will do that. But why has Mitt Romney not endorsed Trump?
I guess because he enjoys his ill-gotten status as this avatar of Republican virtue. And he enjoys
that might be an oxymoron, but he, enjoys... he is the nominee from 2012. When's has it ever before in American history the nominee, at least I can't think of it in the 20th century, the nominee from cycle minus one refuses to endorse the nominee from cycle zero? Has that ever happened before?
Not in recent American history. I haven't done a thorough study of, say, the John Quincy Adams era.
Back when there were actual duels and
but not in recent history. And I think Romney enjoys the adulation that he's receiving from unexpected quarters. Let's say, I mean, you now see this phenomenon of liberal pundits wishing that we could return to the days when Republicans were as full of integrity as Mitt Romney.
Right.
Whereas
right.
4 years ago, they were accusing him of, the worst, most sordid offenses. Largely,
yeah, he tackled that gay kid at his prep school and shaved his head or something like that. You remember that one?
Yeah, I mean, there was...
that wasn't very nice.
Yeah, I mean, they would accuse him of, his election would facilitate the death of untold Americans because he would repeal Obamacare. I mean, some of these charges had legitimacy, but they don't just simply vanish because now we have Trump.
Let's talk about Romney for a
minute. People have this, I think, baseless idea that Mitt Romney and other unpopular Republicans not supporting Trump is somehow massively damaging to Trump. It's like this concerned, trollish instinct that a lot of the pundits have. Like, you're not reuniting the party. Like, as if they have this sincere belief that the party must be united for...
The party doesn't have to be united, but... Okay, there's this book called The Party Decides. I didn't read it, but it became one of the most influential political science books.
And it became
of the
a
past
cliche.
Decade or so. Yeah, it's a cliche. The Party Decides, The Party Decides. So Nate Silver kind of drank The Party Decides Kool-Aid, and that's why he got this election so wrong. He kept on, I mean, I won't rag on him more than I've already ragged on him, but he got a lot of things about Trump very wrong. Okay, The Party Decides. The party does literally decide. Like, it's the Republican National Convention, the Democratic National Convention, they decide, like, right? Yeah. Am I wrong about that?
I mean, I there's some validity to the theories that were espoused in that book. You know, it has come a cliche, but just because people use it as sort of shorthand to refer to this kind of broad notion of party actors influencing outcomes. Right. And that is accurate, but it's not true that the party... I mean, so the party doesn't decide in this sense. Let's say in the state of Wisconsin, there's an open primary. So non-Republicans can vote in the Republican primary. Mm-hmm. So non-members of the Republican Party are deciding which delegates from Wisconsin will be sent to the Republican National Convention. In that sense, the party is not deciding. actors external to the party are deciding.
There's different rules in each state. Sometimes you actually vote on the named electors. That's what actually happened in New York State primary. I got to pick the electors. It was very exciting. I live in Rochester, New York. One of the electors was the mayor of Rochester, New York. One of them was the Joe Morelli, who is the almost became the assembly speaker, but got outmaneuvered. He's my local representative in Monroe County, New York. And a bunch of party hacks I never heard of before. I think it was choose six, and there were only six options. So I quote unquote chose those people. Those are real people. They will travel to the Democratic National Convention in a couple months. So in some states you do that. In some states you just choose the person, and the party picks. It's this weird mishmash of state party rules. But who are these people? So on the Democratic side, it's the mayor of Rochester, New York. Rochester is the third biggest city in New York State. This is a person who maybe has larger ambitions, an African-American woman named Lovely Warren. For her, supporting Hillary Clinton makes a lot of sense. Okay, on the Republican side, I don't know who it was probably some local party hack. Does it make sense for that person to raise their hand and say, I vote for Donald Trump? When we all know what's going to happen, where Trump is, there's no way Trump becomes president.
Well, the reason why I mentioned this problem of the overrepresentation of anti-Trump figures in media is because people who are likely to be elected delegates are people who are not likely to be rabble-rousers or to be seen as defying the will of their constituents.
But Trump is a rabble rouser.
Well, I mean,
they're party hacks. Like, they're almost literally party hacks. Like,
right, they're party hacks, people. So they're going to be falling in line behind the person that the party has overwhelmingly selected as the nominee.
Overwhelmingly, he got around 40 to 45% of the total vote. He squeaked it out.
But not after the most recent primaries. So after he won.
Oh, where he was running unopposed?
Well, yeah, but that's
he won 85% with no one actually running against
because
him.
Because people the dropped weakest. Out. So therefore, he won a larger per share of the vote. I mean, it's not. It's
okay,
not,
well, why do you. Okay, here, let's get back to my wacky conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theory. Why do you think John Kasich dropped out the day after the Indiana primary?
I don't know. I guess he was bloated from all the hoagies that he had scarfed down. And
what is the Indiana, like, what is the Indiana signature food that he ate? I don't actually know what that is. There's something with hot dogs, I think. Sausages or something. Anyway, John Kasich clearly has fun traveling the country and eating a lot and talking to people and telling them weird stories and the kind of stuff Carl Digler talks about. He enjoys that stuff. Why would he drop out when he could have amassed some amount of delegates and at least like affected the party platform, or it's better to have more delegates than fewer delegates, I think. Why did he drop out? It's kind of mysterious.
Again, I have not conducted a psychotherapy session with any of these people. So I'm not in a position to make any definitive judgments about what their mental state was at the time that they made any particular decision. But yeah. I think, you know, the night of the Indiana primary, Reince tweeted out a proclamation that Trump was going to be the nominee. And then he realized that it contained a typo, so he deleted the tweet and then tweeted another proclamation that Trump is the nominee.
I missed that. Yeah. Poor Reince.
Yeah, that was the real...
Trump would never delete a tweet because of a typo. I mean, that just really shows the difference in their political styles.
Actually, he has. He has a couple times.
Because of a typo?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, he just, I guess.
You sure that wasn't one of the girls? He has these girls in the office. He yells out what he wants to say, and they type it in.
Yeah, I guess he yelled out, delete the tweet, not delete my account.
No, the account will live forever.
Yeah, I don't remember what the exact tweet was that he had a typo, but it kind of like it really altered the meaning of the tweet. So I guess he was forced to in that situation. But,
okay. Yeah, yeah.
Most of the time, you're right. He is beyond typo.
I mean, some of them became running jokes. Like he called Marco Rubio like a chocker instead of a choker.
Right.
He doesn't.
I think
give
that
a
might
fuck.
Have been it. Actually, I'm not sure. But
oh, okay. Well, that one became a legend. You know, calling Rubio a chocker. I mean, and he is a chocker.
Yeah.
He's a chocker and a choker.
Trump is right occasionally. So.
Yeah, a stop clock. Okay, well, here's the thing. It turns out, strangely enough, Donald Trump knows way more about politics than anyone thought. Would you agree with that?
I would say...
I mean, as we said earlier, he dismantled
well
the opposition one by one.
I don't know that his well of raw knowledge is greater than people thought. I think maybe his instincts are more adroit than people thought.
Okay, he could not pass the AP US History exam.
Right.
He would probably get a 2 out of 5.
I would love to read his essay portion of that exam.
Well, I'm sure he'll be the subject of many questions. I mean, this is American history.
No, I mean, I would love to read the essay that he wrote on that exam.
He probably had someone take it for him.
I want him to take it now and see if how he matches up with the the 10th and 11th and 12th graders of the
probably
United States.
I would say he's under the 50th percentile in terms of America's 11th graders.
Yeah,
knowledge about American history and so forth. Okay, but politics is not just history. It's not science. Political science is not a real science. Just a slight side note. Dylan Matthews, is that the writer's name, writes for Vox?
Mm-hmm.
He had a tweet about a month or so ago, I guess it was the night of the Indiana primary, so maybe about 6 weeks or so ago. He said, boy, what did anyone have in their bracket Trump and Kasich as the final two? And this set me off in a weird way, because what I realized is that to Dylan Matthews, politics is like March Madness. Teams go up against each other. You can, 538 calculates the percentages for the March Madness bracket. They were very wrong this year, but you can calculate percentages. Okay, politics is not March Madness. Politics is actual madness. This is the tweet I tweeted that got a fair amount of retweets. Politics is about hatred. Politics is about sex. Politics is about power. Politics is not math. You need a certain number of electoral college votes. You need a certain number of delegates. But politics is about power and insanity, at least in America.
Yeah, I guess I would broadly agree with that. I think there is a mathematical element to politics, which people can form an expertise on. And, you know,
we all thought Nate Silver had that expertise. Turns out he didn't.
Well, I mean, I think he still has expertise. He was just a little...
AP stat. I'm sure he got a 5 on his AP stat test.
Oh, I'm sure.
Did he even take AP government politics? Probably not.
You know, that would be a very interesting avenue to pursue.
I want to see, I'm wagging my finger at the camera like Bernie Sanders right now. I want to see the transcripts.
Yeah.
Where are Nate Silver's transcripts? How did he get into the University of Chicago? That's what I want to know.
These will be key details in the definitive New Yorker profile of Nate Silver, potentially.
Of me or of Nate Silver?
Of Nate Silver.
I'm joking. No, Nate Silver screwed the pooch this year. I think we can all agree with that. And I don't think he should be listened to about politics anymore, because this election revealed that he didn't really know what the hell he was talking about.
He still has, I mean, I don't want to let my true feelings about how Nate Silver has conducted himself over the course of this election be known publicly, or else I might get booted.
Okay, I'm fine with it.
I might get booted
He embarrassed himself.
I might get booted off. No, just because I might get booted off Blogging Heads for vulgarity.
this is we've long gone past the family show.
Okay.
So speak your truth if you want to. No, he shat the bed. He embarrassed himself.
I think the problem with Nate and with his associates at 538
Harry Enten and some of these other people.
Yeah, again, I'm trying to be diplomatic here. They adopted this posture of self-assuredness and of a faith in the kind of immutable accuracy of what they were saying that sort of, I guess, overtook whatever actual insights that they were able to provide about the, you know, mathematical realities underlying the election. And there is value to that. I mean, there in 2008, I think Nate...
Yeah, he was right in 08. He got the primaries right.
That's what brought him to attention, first of all.
What was just that he
was, that he was right about the ultimate outcome of the primaries or the general election? It was that all throughout the process, he would offer... you know, insights that countervailed conventional wisdom about what certain polling meant.
Yeah.
And he was just able to, you know, cut through a lot of the pablum of ordinary political punditry in a way that was really useful for someone.
Yeah, in 08, he was an anonymous blogger originally.
Yeah, Poblano. His name was Poblano. People forget.
Yes, he posted on Daily Coast. He actually appeared on Blogging Heads in 08. Con Carroll interviewed him. We'll link to that. That's a historical document. Okay, there are people who win the lottery and then write books about how you too can win the lottery. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the problem was that it's just a lack of humility on their part about what they were capable of doing with their mathematical analysis.
Models.
Yeah.
They built a model. What's weird is that I read Nate Silver's book and it's very good. I wonder if he actually wrote that book. If he did, he forgot to read it again. They built a model. They mistook the signal for the noise. They built a model and they thought that their model was reality. They had this thing, the endorsement primary. This meant nothing in the end. Jeb Bush got a lot of endorsements. Marco Rubio got a lot of endorsements. Ted Cruz didn't get any endorsements because everyone hates him. And Trump didn't get any endorsements because he is a joke. So the endorsement primary, which they had listed, I think, on the homepage of 538.com, was an untested model. They put it out into the wild. It was garbage. It didn't predict anything at all. So that was a waste of everyone's time and effort. They should have just stayed home in bed.
Well, it's not garbage just because it was not predictive. It was still a useful metric for gauging what was going on in the primary at a given moment in time.
Okay, well, you know, if I look outside in the sky and it's sunny out, I can say, well, it's never going to rain again. Look, the sun is out. You know, they overinterpreted the data that they came up with a data point. Okay, it's an actual data point, endorsements. They overinterpreted it to think that it equaled, you know, 5% of the total vote share or something, when really it didn't mean anything this year. Like, years are different. This year is a strange year. This year is the strangest year in 150 years, I think.
Yeah, I think – you know, another problem with the 538 analysis, and again, I just want to stipulate, and I'm saying this sincerely, but I do appreciate a lot of what 538 does and what Nate in particular does, and also his associates. But I think a lot of what people have recoiled at is their kind of air of certitude, or their air that they're the definitive authorities on everything politics related. So the difference between this cycle and
not just politics, sports, okay, science, they have like five different verticals. They thought they could predict March Madness. They didn't do that.
Yeah, and that would be reflected in these splashy headlines that they would come up with to generate clicks, which is, you know, fair enough, but it would give the impression that, oh, Bernie Sanders is only going to win two states, or don't stop, or quote unquote, stop freaking out about Trump. Like, so they're, the humility that I feel that Nate does have at his core, and again, I don't know him personally, but that wasn't reflected in a lot of the headline, and the headlines that came out, and, you know, rarely are headlines really a reflection of anything worthwhile.
Yeah.
But,
so the headlines were teases, but he still said over and over again, Trump can't win, Trump can't win, Trump can't win. Okay, if the guy who we listen to because he knows the numbers and can tell us with, you know, a percentage accuracy what's going to happen, if he's wrong, 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 why should we listen to him at all? I don't think we should.
Yeah, I mean, and the problem in 2008, Nate was a critic of conventional wisdom. In 2016, he was setting the terms of the conventional wisdom. So he had an investment, I think, individually in the outcomes of the primaries this year because his reputation was sort of intertwined with those outcomes in a way that wasn't true in 2008.
If he hadn't bounced to ESPN and founded his own eponymous site, the New York Times would fire him at the end of this election cycle. He was just way too wrong. I mean, he was more wrong than Maureen Dowd.
Well, I mean,
he brings clicks, but
well, they did predict,
he was embarrassingly wrong.
I think they predicted with something like 95% to 98% certainty that Hillary would be the nominee. So they were correct about that. But what that led to were these condescending and derisive comments about Bernie Sanders over the course of the primary campaign about, you know, how
his strength
wasn't
Sanders.
As real as people thought, and they kind of began to troll Bernie Sanders supporters in a way that, I guess, to bolster their credentials as objective in some sense. And I think that really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way as well. I mean, there's a way to dissect fallacies that Bernie Sanders supporters might be wielding without seething with contempt for them. and I think despite their ostensible posture as objective, data-driven journalists, they kind of weirdly got into this cycle of trolling back and forth with Bernie Sanders supporters that did not give any degree of assurance about their, I guess, impartiality.
Yeah, they shat the bed. I think that's the best way to put it. They shat the bed. Okay, here's something. 2008, Nate Silver. 2016, Carl Digler.
Yeah. What can I say? We are not worthy.
Yeah, okay. Spoiler alert, kids. Carl Digler is not a real person. He's a creation of two comedy writers in Brooklyn. He predicted more accurately than the guru, Nate Silver. Okay, so I've compared this to the class clowns ran for president and they beat the valedictorian to be president. That's essentially what this is. Like, a couple of jokers literally beat, you know, the class president at his own game.
Right.
So that's weird. Like, this is a fact. It's just very strange.
Has that fact been systematically examined and determined with, like, a peer-reviewed process? I mean, I'm not doubting it.
No, okay, the Digler boys made a website, or Cafe.com made a website that I think is called 638. It's either called 638 or 539.
Uh-huh.
And it tallied all the predictions. So Digler did predictions for, like, U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam,
right,
you know, the Alaska caucuses on both sides. Nate Silver did not predict Guam. He ignored Guam. So Digler, you know, if we give, like, Silver, like, a zero for everything that happened that he didn't wager on or whatever, or offer a prediction, then Digler, like, blew him out of the water. Even if we include everything, I think Diggler still still beat him narrowly, because Diggler got some big ones correct that Nate Silver got wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what this kind of indicates more broadly beyond the epic Diggler-Silver, you know, snafu, is that the importance of subjective on-the-ground reporting was magnified this cycle. So you wouldn't, if you had just sat behind a computer and looked at data in the summer of 2015, you would have had scant indication that the Sanders campaign would become a major force in American politics, mm-hmm. which could conceivably, if not overtake the Democratic Party, at least become its most salient political, block.
It could split off to be something else. It could join with the Green Party. It could take over the party. It could be more like the evangelical base is to the Republican Party. Like Bernie has showed that he didn't win. He's not going to win, but he showed that a lot of people who voted the Democratic primaries are not happy with the way the world is going.
Yeah, and similarly, if you had sat behind a computer and just examined Republican primary polling data, it would have been reasonable for you to assume that Trump was just a temporary blip and was... Mm-hmm.
But the weird thing is that Trump always pulled well. Even in the beginning, Trump pulled well. And people were like, oh, it's so early. It's July 2015. No one's going to vote for 8 months, blah, blah, blah. Well, Trump has led the polling consistently. That's part of what allowed Diggler to make these predictions. It's almost like it's what's bizarre is that Nate Silver's the numbers guy. He stopped trusting the numbers. Like if you aggregate the polls, it's not hard to do. Every website does it today. If you aggregate the polls, you get a pretty good estimate of what's going to happen. You'll be right about 19 out of 20 times if you just aggregate the polls. they're usually right.
Yeah, but I mean the point is that, you know, the reason why Trump, despite leading polls, was discounted as a lasting force was because we had evidence in prior cycles that candidates who didn't have any real staying power can float to the top of the polling group. And
Herman Cain.
Yeah. So that was constantly referenced. Oh, Herman Cain led the polls. Michelle Bachmann led the polls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, Trump's leading the polls can't possibly be significant. And I think what subjective on-the-ground reporting would have demonstrated to people who believe that was that there is a genuine and lasting movement behind Trump and behind Sanders that you can't get a fully comprehensive grasp of if you simply, again, sit behind a computer and
look at a spreadsheet.
And fiddle with spreadsheets, right.
Yeah, okay, well, lasting, we don't know. We can't predict that lasting. Who knows? You know, is the Tea Party a lasting movement? Did the Tea Party become the GOP? Sanders and Trump are both elderly people. They're going to be gone in the next 30 years, we hope. Unless something really strange happens. And so who's the successor? Is it going to be Ivanka Trump? Is it going to be Tulsi Gabbard? Who the hell is going to lead these movements? I will not predict these things because I'm not Nate Silver or Carl Diggler. Let's...
Ted Cruz will be our overlord one day. That's my prediction.
I, for one, welcome our new psychotic serial killer overlord.
My joke is that, you know, one day we will all be worshiping Ted Cruz at gunpoint.
let's back up and kind of take this a little bit full circle. Okay, here's a personal question. Where did you grow up?
New Jersey.
Okay, I grew up in New Jersey too.
Okay.
Northern New Jersey?
Yeah.
Central or Southern?
Northern.
Okay, we probably played each other in Ultimate Frisbee in high school. I grew up in Essex County. Where did you grow up?
I also grew up in Essex County. Okay, this is getting
You're
weird.
Shitting me.
This is getting weird, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I went to Columbia High School. Where did you go?
That's Maplewood, right?
Yeah.
You know, West Caldwell?
Okay, so you're more in Tony Soprano's
right
place. Okay, so did you, when you were growing up, did you know who Donald Trump was? Like when you were like 8 years old, did you know who Donald Trump was?
Eight might be a little young, but we did watch The Apprentice as a family, as I recall. So that would have been.
Okay, how old are you, young man?
27.
Okay, I'm 33. When I was a kid, I knew who Donald Trump was in the same way that I knew who Al Sharpton was, and Rudy Giuliani and Ed Koch and Dinkins. I knew who these people were because in northern New Jersey, it's funny that we grew up about 10 miles from each other. There's not a when I was a kid, there wasn't a local news station even. There is now. News 11. Or no, what is it? News 12. News 12, sorry. 11 is WPIX.
NJTV as well.
Okay, when I was a kid, there was Channel 4, 2, 4, 5, 7, 11. These are all New York City channels.
And 9.
Nine.
UPN. UPN. Never forget.
I can't forget UPN.
Never forget.
The news would be on. It would be the New York City News. The Daily News and the New York Post were sold on newsstands. I, somehow, just as a child, knew who Donald Trump was. I knew who Marla Maples was, or still is. I knew about Ivana, not Ivanka, Ivana Trump. I kind of know who Donald Trump is. Maybe because you grew up a little bit later than I did. I was raised with Donald Trump in a weird way. I literally remember my parents talking about Trump when I was a kid, just in the way that today they would talk about, like people talk about the Kardashians. So, okay, the reason I'm setting all this up is that I know who Trump is. He is a small-time con man gone big time. Like, do you agree with that?
Has he committed fraud? Yes.
Yes.
Yes,
he is guilty of fraud. Yeah. Like, literally, yes. I think almost everyone would have, even, like, probably even Rens Priebus would say yes to that.
Well, I mean, you mentioned that people, you know, his fellow candidates generally laid off him until it was too late.
Very stupidly.
But actually, you know, in between the Nevada caucus and Super Tuesday, so I think it was February 28th or something like that, Ted Cruz actually went on one of the Sunday shows and accused Trump of having associations with Fat Tony Salerno and other organized crime figures.
Yeah, which probably true.
Would have been something to bring up a little bit sooner and have that really be fleshed out to a satisfactory degree in case the nominee of a major party does have ties to criminal organizations, which he almost certainly does and has been extensively documented.
He ran a criminal organization called Trump University.
Well, and it's not a criminal organization. It's being it's probably going to be
a scam. You know, if you're selling timeshares in Florida, is that criminal or not? I mean, it's a scam. It's not organized crime.
He's going to be held civilly liable for wrongdoing done by
if people have been able to get loans, probably not to attend Trump University, because it was never a real university.
No, it was never accredited for anything. It was basically a scam. I would say that. Looking back, I don't remember having any awareness of his tabloid exploits. I mean, I do remember. I think I probably first became aware of him, like most people, when he ended up hosting a nationally very popular
the
reality
Apprentice.
Show. Yeah. So
okay. So The Apprentice, I think, was 2004. I watched it with my friends in college. It was like junior year for me in college. So that was like 2003, 2004. Okay. In The Apprentice, he's presented as, you know, like someone like Henry Ford or George Eastman here in Rochester, New York, founder of Kodak. That's phony. That's not who he is. The most true thing that was said in the Republican primary was what Marco Rubio said about Trump. If his father wasn't rich, he would be selling watches on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, that was funny.
He's a
funny one from Little Marco.
Core. Yeah, Little Marco scored, but he didn't know enough to really go for the kill. Okay, the meta theory here is that Little Marco is a high school jock. The high school jock can't take down the high school bully because usually they're on the same team or the same person. Mm-hmm. But leave that to the side. Okay. Have you ever seen the Music Man or the Simpsons parody episode of The Music Man?
I watched with Simpsons every day twice for probably
the
like
monorail,
8 years.
The monorail.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, that's a parody of The Music Man.
Okay.
It's about a con man. He comes to River City or Springfield. He sells them a monorail in The Simpsons. He sells them band instruments in The Music Man. Okay, the joke I've been putting on Twitter is, so Harold Hill is the name of the character in The Music Man. Did Harold Hill want to be mayor of River City? No. Harold Hill wanted to fleece River City and then hop on a train car, you know, hop in a boxcar or something and head out to the next town. You could fleece.
Okay. So
What happens after the con is over? Does the con man stick around to be president? No, he runs away.
So let's say this harebrained notion of what Trump is doing is accurate. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's assume that he has this secret plot and he doesn't want to be president. Even so, if a large portion of delegates fail to vote for him on the first, second, or fourth ballots, they are guilty of misdemeanors in various states, punishable by jail time and major fines. So,
okay, how much of a fine? 1,000, 10,000, 100,000?
I think
probably more like 500 would be my guess.
I have it right here, actually.
Okay, no, it must vary state by state. These are state rules.
Okay, so in Arizona, failing to uphold one's duty as an elector is punishable.
Okay, wait. This is as a delegate or as an electoral college?
As a delegate.
Okay.
This is a statute specifically pertaining to the primary election for both parties. So if a delegate in Arizona, and Trump won, Arizona was a winner take all election. So Trump won all delegates in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So if any delegate fails to vote for Trump on the first ballot in Arizona, he or she is guilty of a class 2 misdemeanor, which carries a maximum punishment of 4 months in jail, a $750 fine, and 2 years of probation. Now, I wouldn't assume that a prosecutor would be especially moved to bring those charges necessarily.
Have you heard of something called civil disobedience?
I have, but I don't think...
Usually, like, the Brooks Brothers crowd isn't doing it. This is a strange year.
Party hacks in Arizona are not the type to engage in civil disobedience. They are not anarcho-syndicalists. They are not... They are not...
Just you wait.
Yeah, they are not going to be, you know, sitting in a circle outside, you know, in front of militarized police in Cleveland doing...
Chanting the whole world is watching.
Right. So, I mean, if your perception of who the Republican Party delegates are is informed by people like Rick Wilson or Patrick Ruffini or Liz Mayer,
they're not delegates. They are campaign operatives.
But if they color your perception of who the relevant actors are here...
Well, who are these people? Who do you think they are?
Well, I mean, you could find out who they are. I mean, they were...
But who are they in their essence? They are party hacks.
They are party hacks who don't want to rock the boat. I mean, and they have professional obligations, which...
Sit down, you're rocking the boat.
They have professional...
That's what that makes me think of. Okay, Donald Trump is rocking the fucking boat.
They have professional obligations that... They are not going to want to jeopardize
the Republican Party from self-immolation.
No, they have personal employment-related obligations. They're not going to want to jeopardize.
Who's going to fire them? Who's going to fire them? Rents?
I don't know.
Rents? However the fuck you say his name.
I don't know, like the Pima County Executive Committee, something or other? I mean, they're not.
They'll go to jail. They'll be heroes.
No,
they are
not going to go into jail.
They'll be carried through the streets.
I'm telling you, they're not. These are not the people. Go talk to these people. I mean, I've go report on some of these types of events.
Okay, well, I'm just here in Western New York mouthing off on Twitter, so I'm not talking to these people. But don't these people – okay, this is what I said in the previous Blogging Heads. These people have to go home. They go to Cleveland, and, like, something happens. And then they need to go home and look their little children in the eye. And the child's going to say, Daddy, what did you do in Cleveland?
Okay.
And the adult's going to say, I don't know, darling. I just don't know.
Okay, and if,
what are they going to do? What are they going to tell their kids?
And if they somehow steamroll Trump, they'll have to go back to Maricopa County and look their little daughter in the eye and say, and the daughter will ask,
saved the Republic.
Daddy, why didn't you help stop the lady who did Benghazi? So, I mean,
four people killed, Daddy. Four people killed. I'm sorry, we shouldn't be joking about this, but...
these aren't people who, like, if you follow the career track where you end up being a delegate to the Republican convention, you haven't, like, been this really conscientious, you know, political, student of political philosophy. Never mind, civil disobedience.
You probably haven't read Rawls. Let's put it that way.
I mean, there's probably going to be this
Republican delegate from Pima County.
Remember, these are conservatives, so they like law and order for the most part.
They probably haven't read Nozick either.
They generally tend to like law and order.
Yeah.
Tend to frown upon people who violate norms around law and order.
Whereas, okay, you're describing Donald Trump. Law and order, he's a criminal. violating norms. He does it every single day.
Donald Trump has not been held. Has not been convicted for any criminal offense.
Okay, well, Mr. Trump, I apologize. I don't want you to assume me under, you know, libel laws or whatever. You are not a criminal. You've never been convicted of any crime or any criminal conspiracy. I apologize, Mr. Trump.
You know, but the reason why I bring up the Arizona statute, and there are other statutes of that kind, and even the statutes that don't specifically prescribe criminal punishment for failing to uphold one's duty as a delegate, you know, if the Republican rules, if the Rules Committee at the Republican National Committee or at the Republican National Convention were to somehow unbind all delegates, and in Florida, for example, the delegates overwhelmingly chose some other candidate, that would be violating the spirit of the Florida legislature's dictum. To,
the spirit,
yeah, which is that you know, the Florida legislature the dictum is that. Any delegate
I don't want the Florida legislator's spirit's dictum to be mentioned on this podcast.
Okay, well,
this is a family podcast.
The spirit of the dictum is that the delegates are expected to reasonably reflect the results of the Florida primary. So, okay. You know, if there was a really enterprising prosecutor out there, he could hold Rules Committee members criminally liable for
facilitating the state.
Yeah, they should.
They'll go to Cuba.
Yeah.
They'll get on a raft. They'll go to Cuba. Okay, the spirit. Well, spirit, some people hear it, some people fear it, some people just don't go near it. Okay. This is all a lot of bullshit, in my opinion. They can get around it. It's happened in the past. You know, why were people rioting in 1968?
They might be able to get around
it. The election was stolen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way that they could probably lawyer themselves out of it. But my point in even raising
this... Probably half of them are lawyers.
My point in even raising this in the first place was that there are impediments that need to be overcome beyond just, you know, coming up with some rule alteration in the Republican Rules Committee. I mean,
this
has bearing on state law and criminal law. So
it will involve coordination. Certainly the GOP has not showed a lot of coordination. But okay, this is the party that 16 years ago effectively stole the election, engineered George W. Bush getting Florida's 25 electoral votes, and he became president. So there's people in the party who, presumably those people are still alive. It was only 16 years ago. I know you were but a lad when that happened, but I was a rad. I remember it very well.
I do remember
the Brooks Brothers riot. That was something that really happened. Those people are all still around. There's smart people in the Republican Party.
And the guy who led the riot, Roger Stone?
He now works for Trump.
Trump's
okay, they brought him in because he was one of Nixon's dirty tricks boys. We need Karl Rove to dispatch a couple interns to cause havoc. But I think what's going to happen, we're probably towards the end of our time here. Cleveland is still a month away. We don't know what's going to happen. Weird stuff happens every day in America, whether or not there's an election. But Donald Trump adds to the craziness. He takes it up by a power of 10. He's shooting off at the mouth. I mean, what do you think of this? Like, what is Trump thinking right now? Because he's not moving to the middle. He's just popping off at the mouth every single day. Like, what do you think his strategy is right now?
I mean, I don't know. Just go crazy as much as possible. I mean, that seems
like it worked before. He might as well try it for the general election.
Yeah, I mean, again, the psychoanalytical aspect of this is beyond my pay grade.
Well, Trump is a human. He has some theory of what's happening in the world that is causing him to act in the way he's acting.
It's just that when we're talking about likely outcomes, and you say anything could happen and weird things happen all the time, okay, there's always a possibility that an asteroid could hit Earth right now and everything is just obliterated. But that's
a giant orange asteroid, perhaps.
Even a giant asteroid, with a little hair comb over thing.
Yeah, flying back in the air.
Yeah,
I mean, comet's tail kind of resembles Trump's hairdo, but we'll put that to the side.
But that's not a reasonable, outcome to entertain when trying to come up with a projection as to what will happen in a little over a month at a convention. I mean, I think. Everything
what does Carl Digler think is going to happen? He's a made-up character has proven to be the Oracle of 2016, so we should probably consult with Digler before anything else. I wouldn't trust Nate Silver to say what's going to happen anymore. He's been discredited.
Here's what I think Trump is thinking, and I think he would be correct to think this. I think he and other Republicans have long assumed, with some justifiability, that the generic Republican candidate would be favored this year because the generic Republican candidate would be favored after 8 years of divisive Democratic control of the presidency. Even when the economy was booming in the late 90s and early 2000s, Al Gore barely won a majority, barely won the popular vote.
Yeah, so the closest election ever. And
that was,
there was weird stuff there. There was the blowjob. There was the fact that Clinton did not campaign for Gore. There was Ralph Nader. There was a lot of weird variables there. There was Florida.
So, I mean, I think, so there are some structural reasons to presume that any generic Republican would win this year anyway. And so
here's the weird thing. There is no actual human. There were 16, 17, 18 people who ran for the nomination on the Republican side. Strangely enough, not a single one of them was generic Republican. Maybe Marco Rubio, but he failed to thrive. Like, you need an actual human.
Yeah, maybe Scott Walker would have been a generic Republican.
He dropped out way early on. That's a mystery to me. I've asked that to a couple people. No one has given me a really good answer for why Walker dropped out so early. He seems pretty generic, but he's also very boring. Need to be president. No. It helps to be someone who people like.
But then,
charisma.
In some ways, Trump is a generic Republican. I mean, and that seems outrageous to assert. But he's a relatively socially moderate person who won the primary on the strength of moderates coalescing around him. And he was he was unusual in that he paired that with very conservative and evangelical voters also coalescing around him. So he developed this unusual coalition. But at the same time, he has
he had the Jesus freaks and the juggalos. Or maybe I said mass holes plus juggalos or something like that. He had an unusual coalition that powered him to his 45%.
And I think it's way too early to just suppose that he has absolutely no chance to win. I mean, I made this point on Twitter, I guess, a couple days ago. People forget, but in early September of 2008, McCain and Obama were roughly tied in the national polling averages. And then once the economy crashed, Obama really took off. So it wasn't a given that Obama would be winning in 2008. And we have no idea what, and there are so many variables, between now and November that it would just be foolish.
Yeah, there was the worst mass shooting in American history happened a week ago.
So anything
can happen. The global economy, only a few people saw the housing crash coming. Michael Lewis wrote a book about it called The Big Short. There could be something lurking out there that, 99.9% of people don't see that could send everything, upend everything. Who the hell knows?
I have a question for you. We were going to go down a Romney rabbit hole earlier.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is so completely obvious and should be obvious to all right-minded people that Romney was somehow
the white knight,
or that it was less morally questionable to support Romney than it is Trump?
Well, I don't think morals really play into it. Politics is only glancingly involved in morality.
Well, let's say supporting Trump is obviously more shameful than supporting Romney.
Well, for whom? For the average American voter or for the delegates?
For anyone.
Okay, Trump is a buffoon, a literal con man, a philanderer, a liar, a bigot, a sexist. It seems there's pretty strong evidence that he impregnated women he wasn't married to and then paid for their abortions. He cheated on multiple wives. I would not want to have him over for dinner. Romney, I didn't like him. I didn't vote for him. That being said, he is a patriot. He's a Mormon. He doesn't even drink Coca-Cola. Clean living. He looks great. He's the same age as Trump. He looks great. He loves his country. He's not. He did a lot of shit that, he put a lot of people out of work. At the same time, Mormons love America. he is the only white knight that's left in the party because the GOP is so morally corrupt. It can't be Dick Cheney. The only other person I see out there floating around is Rick Santorum. If my crazy theory is right, it has to be either Romney or Santorum. it really can't be someone. It can't be Cruz because everyone hates him. It can't be Kasich because he was such an also-ran. It can't be Rubio because he showed himself to be a shock artist. It can't be Jeb Bush because he's the brother of the worst president in modern American history. You go down, it can't be McCain because he lost already. And he's involved in immigration reform, and immigration is a hot-button issue. If you kind of go down the list, you eliminate all these supposed, like, you know, great candidates that people like Mark Halperin and Chris Saliza said would make this such a great field. If you go down the list and eliminate people, really the only person who's left is Romney. Well, he's never going to run for elected office again. He's very wealthy. He wants to save the Republic. He wants to save the Republican Party. It makes sense to me. What about that doesn't make sense to you?
Well, I mean, the aspect that doesn't make sense to me is this assertion that people make that it's over should be overwhelmingly obvious to anyone with a, you know, a brain that Romney was a morally superior choice to Trump.
But, so let's just more. I don't think morals factor into it that much.
Or that, you know, but, it was. Trump is a more. It's more morally shameful to support Trump than it was to support Romney.
Well, I agree with that. Yeah, well, why do you disagree with that?
Well, I'm not saying I even disagree with it. I just don't think it can be assertive with such blindness. Well,
there's a large debate in philosophy about whether there is moral truth or not. So okay. I don't think we're going to settle that with a couple minutes remaining on this episode.
Let's assume there's moral truth.
Okay, I think there is moral truth as well, but you know, there's very intelligent philosophers who disagree.
Okay,
is it true that Trump is a con man? Yes, we both agree with that, right?
Okay, but it's, you know, you laid out a bunch of negative attributes of Trump. So you know, Romney lied on a number of occasions.
You know, someone once said his name is I.F. Stone. He once said all governments lie, and all politicians lie.
And a lot of the traits you just laid out have to do with like individual character and rectitude. I don't think that's the operative factor in judging whether someone is fit for office, necessarily.
But judging by whom? The only people who judge are the great and good American people who vote in November.
Okay, well, this is my personal judgment. I mean, I don't think...
Well, are you a Republican? Did you vote in the Republican primary?
No.
Okay, so who cares? I don't quite get what the point is here.
But I could still render a judgment. I mean, so the point is, so Romney did things like he accused Obama of sympathizing with jihadists on the night of the Benghazi attack in September 2012.
I deplore that, and I condemn it in the harshest terms possible.
He surrounded himself with all the worst failed neocons from the George W. Bush era and was going to reinstate them into power and have them dictate American foreign policy, whereas Trump explicitly disavows those people and says that he will not surround himself with those sorts of people. So that's one potential difference.
I think I see what you're saying now. Trump is better than Romney on some issues. I'm closer to Trump's position on abortion than I am to Romney's position. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm closer to Romney's position on immigration than I am to Trump's position. Trump is orthogonal to a lot of the traditional debates in the GOP. Trump is going to destroy the GOP, in my opinion. Like, I don't think... Maybe the party will, like, slump along for a couple more cycles, but... If I'm right, then Trump can go form his own third party called the Trump Party or the Make America Great Party, and Sarah Palin can join it, and Rick Perry can join it, and you know Chris Christie can join it, and probably 50 to 75 million Americans would support it.
Yeah, and so I mean, Romney privately disparaged 47% of all Americans as lazy welfare recipients. Essentially, Trump is.
I'm not making a brief for Romney.
Trump has never really disparaged poor people. I mean, that's actually...
The poor people love him.
Yeah, and
the poor, you know, he's actually
that's another thing that distinguishes him from Republican orthodoxy. So, I mean, this is all just to say that if you want to argue that supporting Trump is just absolutely the worst possible thing anyone can do, but supporting Romney wasn't, I need to see argumentation to that effect rather than assertion.
You're misunderstanding my argument then.
I'm not even necessarily attributing it to you. This is just something I see.
It's kind of like a Rick Wilson type would say that. So I'm not a Republican, I'm a Democrat. So I think that, you know, the Republican Party, well, I have a hashtag I made up that no one else cares about called the conservative movement is a scam. Rick Perlstein has written about this. The conservative movement is a scam, but if something can't last forever, it won't. So it is ending this year. Romney is a morally better person than Donald Trump just because, let's look at his personal life. you know, Romney seems like a good husband and father. Trump, obviously,
but
not.
Who cares? I mean, who cares if he's a good husband and father? I mean, just
the American voters.
Like, he doesn't curse and he says golly and, like, he...
The American voters care.
Okay, but, like, but...
Why could Newt Gingrich not become president? He was married 3 times. Why does Hillary Clinton have the support of so many older voters? Because she stuck by her man. This matters. It doesn't matter in, like, true moral calculus, but it matters in the way that the average American thinks about politics. Hillary Clinton stuck by her man.
In the true moral calculus realm, I don't think it matters that, you know, Trump, I mean, Romney doesn't tell crude jokes and, you know, doesn't curse. I mean,
doesn't make fun of disabled people. You know, there's a list of horribles we could go down that Trump does. Doesn't refer to the size of his penis on national television.
I mean, who cares about that?
Who cares? The average American voter. Okay. Like, don't you go out there and talk to people?
Who do people
want to
like
see
that.
On their TV screen for the next 4 years? Like, the American people don't really care about politics, but they care about being good, and they care about doing the right thing in their lives. Like, the average, like, everyone, almost even if you're a hateful person, you think you want to do the right thing in your life, and you're doing it to the best of your ability. They care about those things. There's no way Trump can win. There's just no way. I mean, okay. There's a possibility that he wins the nomination. There's no way he wins the presidency.
But people also care. Like, people also, I mean, have you ever been to, like, a sporting event?
And, I have been. I call it sport. I've attended some events of sport.
Have you heard about how about, like, people tend to carry themselves at major sporting events and talk?
Well, they're drunk. Sometimes they're shouting racial slurs at the opposing team.
So those are people who are not going to be offended by the, by the mannerisms of Trump and actually embrace that. And, you know, have you ever been to a monster truck rally or?
I feel like I should.
You should.
Okay. That's my team versus your team. That's my team versus your team. When it's the president is the leader of all of us. Do we want someone who's the leader of all of us who talks about the size of his dick on national television? Do America's parents want that? No. Do America's grandparents want that? No. Who votes? Parents and grandparents.
I don't think there are a lot of single-issue dick joke voters out there.
Okay, it adds up. It's not like he let slip one time the dick joke. He is a dick joke.
Okay,
we should probably wrap up. Is there anything else you want to ask me about my cuckoo theory?
Well, I mean,
Have I convinced you? I convinced you?
No. I mean, my question for you is, are you volunteering to help pay the legal fees of Republican delegates who violate...
Mitt Romney will pay the legal fees, whoever the fuck, you know, well, John Huntsman or a wealthy industrialist whose name we don't know.
I think David French, the Bill Kristol endorsed candidate who was spectacularly failed. I think
National Review cruise, they'll pass the hat around, right, and everyone will put in their pocket change, which, because it's a bunch of rich old people, will be like $500 each, and they'll go towards the legal fund. Okay, who has legal standing, and what prosecutor is going to prosecute these people? Like, there's prosecutorial discretion, and there's also the legal standing issue. Like, maybe you spend a week in the clink, and you come out to huzzas and well wishes from the assembled masses.
Okay, so
that's what I think.
The National Review. I mean, I've already said that the National Review should cancel this year's cruise as penance for Trump.
They should crash the boat into an iceberg.
Right.
I mean,
they should cancel the cruise and pool the money with David French, who called in the National Review for people to violate these laws. Mm-hmm. So David French, and National Review, and whatever other bigwig donors should pool money for these beleaguered delegates, if they really want them to be the sacrificial lamb for their
there's a lot of money sloshing around the conservative movement because it's a scam. So someone out there will bankroll these people. If the fine is $700, that's chump change, literally.
Okay,
the Koch
brothers
can do it.
Okay, so then let's see them pool their resources and then I'll reevaluate.
Just you wait. We can see what happens. We still have a month to go. Trump says something crazy every day. So we're about at the end of our time. I don't think either of us has convinced the other ones, but this has been an enjoyable discussion. Mm-hmm. And maybe we will meet again. James Bond will return. We'll meet again maybe in about a month when this all starts to go down. I would here in Rochester, New York, I'm actually only about 5 hours away, a little bit less from Cleveland. I'm not going. I would, people who live in Cleveland, I feel sorry for you. It's going to be a total shit show, and there might be riots. So, like, no matter what happens, there might be riots. the Brooks Brother riots, so they probably won't really like smash like electronic stores and stuff. But people have guns, like these people have guns. So I'm gonna stay away from Cleveland. I urge our viewers to do the same. Michael Tracy, where can people find your stuff? What are you on Twitter, and where can they find your stuff?
Yeah, I would say follow me on Twitter. That would be the best avenue to receive my stuff. Where I
so there'll be a link underneath this video to your Twitter handle. But can you say it?
It's
podcast listeners.
M as in Michael, and then Tracy, all one word, MTRACEY, and I distribute my stuff in 140 character increments.
Okay, so I encourage people to follow you. Your avatar looks strikingly like you look in IRL.
Right, gotta maintain brand consistency, like I said.
Yeah, and I think that's my essential problem is that, I don't work hard enough on my brand. But that's for me and my team to deal with. Thanks for coming on. Thanks to our viewers for suffering through another episode of my insane rantings. And we'll see you again next time.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.